Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Anthony Russo
and Joe Russo.
Of course, the co-directors of Avengers Infinity War. You might have heard of it. It's not really making much money out there. I don't know. So, no, biggest opening of all time. Congrats on the success, guys.
Thank you.
I gotta say, man, that you guys left us with a big cliffhanger. A lot of times these movies, there's sort of the safe formula, you know, it kind of wraps itself up in the end. But this one, you really left us dangling. I know it felt more of an intermission towards next year's, but man, was when you guys sat down here and you said, all right, was that a conscious thing? We're going to really shock them. We're going to red wedding them right here and leave them craving till next year.
Well, I look at it. It's our job as storytellers. First of all, we love what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been able to do since the very first film in Iron Man. And we've been following these stories now for 10 years. And, you know, the intention with these movies was to be like a climax or a culmination of everything that's happened in the MCU up to this point. So we knew a story of that scope and scale was a big swing. And Joe and I, we want to do everything we can to bring an experience to audiences that they weren't anticipating. So they can go into the movie theater, be surprised from the very first frame of the film, and be taken on a ride that they couldn't have predicted, but that is also like emotionally engaging and affecting and entertaining. And so that was what we were looking for here. And I think the big swing that you're referring to in this movie is sort of a product of just the ambition of bringing something to audiences that it feels original in respect to the road that these movies have traveled.
Absolutely. And just so you guys know, I'm not going to run any spoilers on air, but you know, it's okay if we get into it now because it's just on my tape recorder, and then we might run a spoiler alert online or something. Okay. But the snap of the finger and everyone starts fading away. I mean, even some major characters, Black Panther, Spider-Man. I mean, I use the Red Wedding analogy because it really was like sort of a gut punch. How are you guys planning on, is it possible we might see some of them back? I know we have some Infinity Stones where we can alter reality and we can alter time. I know you can't confirm nor deny with that, but how do you plan on answering fans' year-long wait on that front?
Well, our commitment always is to telling the best story. So Avengers 4 is the reason we haven't revealed the title yet. We want people focused on this movie first. Obviously, the story will continue the same way that it has from Civil War into Infinity War and from Winter Soldier into Civil War. The stakes are clearly very high with Thanos. There are incredible costs associated with trying to beat him. I think that's all we'll say.
I will say this, that we have a really strong commitment to very real stakes in these movies. And because we believe that without stakes, you know, it takes away your level of emotional investment and engagement. And it's like we love these characters as much as anybody, but all things have to come to an end. There's a cycle to everything, and these movies are in many ways represent the end of the sort of first cycle of Marvel's studios, and there is a commitment to that.
Is that a sneaky way of saying whoever's gone is gone, or is there any chance that anyone could come back?
We can't comment on that. But it's I will say this: for as surprising as this movie was, the next movie may be even more surprising.
Awesome. But first, definitely, we want people to come see this one. Another gut. Not only just that, but I mean, well, I guess it dovetails into that. Just how gutsy of a move it was to make. I mean, it's really Thanos' movie. I mean, there's so many movies that, you know, the villain is just, you know, out to destroy the world, and it's just almost a throwaway, and it's more the Avengers movie. This one, you know, from start to finish, he's the one that gets the character arc. He's the one staring off at the sunset at the end. Talk about sort of the decision to go in that direction and make this, I mean, it's Empire Strikes Back in a way, you know, he sort of triumphs in the end. Talk about how that makes him arguably the most consequential of any of the villains so far. I mean, just by purely the amount of destruction he's done. And also, we get to see him cry. I mean, he's a fully developed villain.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were two reasons behind Thanos occupying the POV in the film. One was that, you know, he's been such a teased character. And the expectations were incredibly high for him as a character. So we knew we needed to give him the story real estate to flesh him out and make people view him as the most intense villain that's occupied, you know, storytelling time in a Marvel film. The second reason was that, you know, after 18 films, it's our job, as Ann said, to keep surprising audiences. And, you know, something that's rarely done in commercial movies. I don't know if I can think of another time that, any, you know, that someone has put a film in the point of view of the villain.
Right.
And we felt that that would make the movie feel fresh, that the main story points of the movie are dictated by the villain, that they're his story points, and that, in essence, he is on the hero's quest in the movie. You know, I know that people like to point out the cliffhanger, but, you know, there's an ending to the film.
Yeah.
And the ending is his ending. It's just not an ending you're used to seeing. But he completed his mission.
While, obviously, Thanos has the big character arc, on the hero side, clearly not everyone can have one. a fully one, like you might in another movie, like in a Wonder Woman or a Black Panther, where it's a full-on origin story. Talk about how you go about juggling 24 characters, and at the same time, why maybe in this case it's not super, super important to have every little character have, it'd be like a 20-hour movie. But, you know, how at this point, we're all familiar with these characters. We've seen their character arcs, and now we want to enjoy sort of the dream matchups of Guardians and Thor and, you know, all these guys. So talk about how you tried to give a little arc, you know, Vision, Scarlet Witch, some of those people, but how at this point, it's more so the audiences already know they can cheer when they come on screen.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a great point. It's like very rarely are you in the have the opportunity as a filmmaker to rely upon so much emotional capital that audiences have in characters that you're using in your movie. It's an incredible opportunity. And, yeah, we've come to know these characters over the years. We've come to love them over the years. And so, yeah, we don't have to do a lot of work introducing them. We just sort of can go run right at what the adventure is. That's why we tried to structure this movie, because it was so dense with so many characters. You know, Joe and I often refer to the film as a smash and grab, and the idea that Thanos is just on a tear for the Infinity Stones. He's one step ahead of our heroes, and the movie sort of moves at this kind of breathless pace when it starts. And that was our effort to sort of like to sort of get a narrative started without having to do too much soft introduction like you're talking about there. So yeah, I think that is the great upside. And look, as we began to think about the story, Joe and I, story and character are like our organizing principles for everything, whether it be the film structure, the scene structure, the way we lay out an action sequence, et cetera. We organize everything very, very specifically around what is the story we are telling and how are we exploring this character at a particular moment or characters. And that is that's how we sort of decided who we would give more sort of story weight to, more screen time to, more scenes to, as we move through the movie. There are characters like Gamora, for instance, mm-hmm. who is a daughter of Thanos, Nebula and Gamora. And that is a very interesting relationship to play with between a hero and villain. When a hero and a villain have a very personal relationship on top of everything else that's going on, things become very exciting. That's one thing we loved about our first Marvel movie, Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Right here in D.C.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. loved shooting it here in D.C., setting it here. And, the relationship between Cap and Bucky Barnes being best friends but also enemies was so complex. So we had a similar, you also see it in the relationship between Thor and Loki, brothers and enemies. So, you know, the idea that Gamora and Thanos had an intimate relationship but at the same time completely adversarial, that is something we wanted to run at as storytellers because it's a very rich area. You know, other characters like Tony Stark, who's been on a mission to sort of anticipate this sort of existential threat that is facing humanity and him, that he knows is out there, this sort of sense of destiny that character has had, that he's been moving toward a moment, a figure like Thanos. That was something we wanted to run at. And we can go through, the entire cast and talk to you about, like, what their specific roads were into this film.
Speaking of Tony Stark, the whole franchise kicked off with him. Does that mean the next one might have sort of is Tony Stark going to play a huge role? I mean, it seemed like it might be the way it kind of left off.
Yeah, I mean, Stark is, certainly central to the universe.
Yeah.
He's always going to play a huge role. I mean, he started the universe. He's the leader of the Avengers. Like Ant said, the existential threat, the great existential threat that haunts the Avengers, which has now manifested itself as Thanos, has always been the most prevalent part of Tony's arc as a character. So, and without question that, he and Thanos had their... their face-off, their tête-à-tête, and it's clear that this is what Tony has always feared, So, you know, he'll always play a significant part.
And another significant part, you gave us a post-credit teaser there of Captain Marvel, which we know is Brie Larson, amazing from Room, Oscar, and Short Term 12. God, she's so great. What can we expect from her in the next chapter? Is she going to take off for Marvel, sort of how, you know, Wonder Woman did for DC? And how excited are you to work with Brie? Or have you already shot it? How much have you actually shot?
We can't say. I can say that we have shot much of the next Avenger movie already, and we still have some left to shoot.
We're working with Brie, though, specifically.
Yeah.
Cannot confirm or deny whether Captain Marvel's in that movie.
Sorry, but yes. Her standalone movie is coming.
If she was in the movie, how great of an actress is she?
She's a remarkable actress, that's for sure.
We work with her on Community, so we know her very well in Community.
Awesome. Just sort of in closing, big picture it for me. You know, from 2008 to 2018, it's been, you guys have sort of rewritten the rules of Hollywood here. I mean, it's sort of gone in more of a episodic, this frame. I mean, there were sequels before, obviously, but you guys really laid it out. We'll do four standalones, bring them together, you guys really changed the game and are laughing all the way to the bank. Talk about just sort of how, like, I'm a big movie history guy, buff. So, like, where does how does this sort of 10-year period that Marvel's done fit into the overall arc, and how much it's changed the game?
Well, it's a grand experiment narrative, and, you know, we've never seen anything like this before. Two-dimensional, 2-hour, close-ended stories had an incredible run for about 100 years, and I think audiences are interested now in storytelling that takes place over several years and several films. This is an advancement in storytelling, and I think you can sit around decrying the demise of the daguerreotype, or you can look towards the future. But you know, technology has altered this generation significantly, and the way that they process and consume stories is very different than the way that we did.
I mean, look at television; it's the same, serialized,
It is serialized because I think people want a stronger emotional connection than what they can get in 2 hours. I don't think that you could have created the same emotional response that we've created in Infinity War were it a standalone 2-hour film without 10 years of buildup, without 10 years of time investment on the part of the audience, passion investment, emotional investment. It wouldn't have happened. It's not a movie that can exist any other way, and that's what's so unique about Marvel, as you pointed out. That's the grand experiment. But I do think that we're going to keep moving more towards immersive storytelling. We now have the advent of AR and the advent of VR. I don't know that in 20 years you're going to look back and see the same, you know, a format or same structure to stories as we saw for the last 100 years. I think it's at a turning point, and it's going to start to evolve very quickly. And I would argue that if, you know, Netflix has brought us anything, it was a new form of narrative where they would drop all 10 episodes. In one day, that allows you to watch a 10-hour movie, and has a different structure and a different feeling than a 2-hour film, and that's a new form of narrative as well.
Awesome. Well, I know we're getting the go home, so thanks so much for joining us. And you've raised such fascinating points, and it's interesting for us critics and viewers to go in there and are we judging these as standalones or a larger piece of the whole? And I think where we're heading is it's a larger piece of the whole. So get out there and do your homework and see them all so you can see where it fits in, you know? Yeah. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That was a great conversation.